Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Yeah, so it comes in waves, doesn't it? It's like all of a sudden you're like, holy hell, I have not left the house for 2 weeks. I've gone for walks in the neighborhood, but that is it. I've not been anywhere. I've not gone anywhere. But it's still really fun to be able to do this show every day, and hopefully it's given you a chance to have some normal stuff in your life. A lot of people, John, I've got my DMs open, so I go back and forth with people all the time, and a lot of people, frankly, from all over the world, are listening and following what we're doing on the show. I got multiple DMs about how excited people were about John Hamm coming on the show today.
Yeah, count me on that list too.
So it's going to be an exciting week, really cool week, and we're glad that you're out there and hope you're getting through it.
And a lot to talk about again, as most of the stories have to do with how do we fill time until we get sports back?
Yes.
And they took a couple of cracks at it over the weekend. Did you watch Horse at all?
I did watch Horse. And
what'd you think?
I thought it was going to be terrible because you told me they've done it in the past and it was terrible. And I thought it was slightly less than awful.
I thought
that's
it was
my review. Slightly less than awful.
You liked it more than I did.
Wait a minute. I just said slightly less than awful. That means that's not a beaming review. That's not like, oh, my God, this is the greatest thing in the world. But it was better than I thought it was going to be.
It was worse than I thought it was going to be.
Really?
But a couple of disclaimers. I'm not sure they could have made it much better. I mean,
no.
I think they're incredible. I was texting with Sedano throughout the whole thing. And He made the point several times that, look, you're so technically limited that it's almost impossible to make that compelling. But I thought they made a couple of decisions early on that hurt it out of the gate.
Okay.
Number one, Mark Jones is a really good broadcaster, and he's a great guy. But he is a straight arrow.
Right. You needed an entertainer in that, or somebody with Mark Jones.
Well, again, that becomes technically problematic, but you needed somebody like, I thought it would have been fun if you could have got the Van Gundys to do it together, or if you could have got Kevin Hart to do it and he could give them ideas on stuff they should try,
right.
Or even if you could have got Kornheiser and Wilbon to do it.
Yeah, that would have been good too.
But I thought to hire a guy and tell him, don't goof around, play it straight, was the first mistake.
Yeah.
Because Mark did everything you could do if you're put in that position, but he's not.
Yeah, I mean, he did fine, but he's not a funny guy. He's not a crack a joke guy. He's not a make you laugh guy.
Right. And so then maybe they were thinking, okay, well, the players will be the entertainment talking to each other. And it's just hard to do that when you're technically limited.
Right.
Like
basically,
when you and I,
they have two cameras at each location, somebody running around with sort of a different view and then sort of a master shot at each location. I mean, it's hard to give it any visual sizzle using a couple of iPhones.
Right. And then, for example, when you and I, and we've been doing this a long time, and people say, wow, I'm surprised that you guys are able to do this remotely. Well, people forget we started this show way back in the beginning when I was in San Diego and you were in L.A., and so we had like 2 years to learn each other's cadence so we can kind of get away with it. But when we're interviewing somebody, there are a lot of times if you're listening closely where we're both trying to get in and one of us will just back out.
Yes.
But they wouldn't know that. Like they wouldn't have a Mason Ireland cadence and they wouldn't know each other's habits. So it would have been hard. But Kornheiser and Wilbon would have.
Yeah, they know each other well. They could have worked together well.
Right. And so I thought the first mistake was hire a guy to play it straight, which is what they did with Mark.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And then, okay, so then it starts. And Sedano made a good point that probably the worst video you had was Trae Young and Chauncey Billups. Even though it was arguably the best matchup, their video wasn't great.
Yeah, it looked like Trae Young didn't have a good connection. He also didn't have a fancy rim. Like, some of those guys had fancy courts in their backyards, and other people looked like they were shooting in their driveways.
Well, and Mike Conley had like a personal dojo unbelievable.
He had his own, and Allie Quigley, meanwhile, is like she looks like she's literally shooting on a rickety hoop in a driveway.
Right. So if you know they're doing it again Thursday, I don't know if it
John, we get to the semis on Thursday.
Yeah, I'll probably watch it because there's nothing else to watch.
No, yeah.
But if they do it, I think they should either bring somebody in with Mark, put Mark Moore in a straight host role where he throws it to Kornheiser and Wilbon. Maybe, and Sendano had a good point. He said, maybe they didn't want to do it. I said, what about Mike Breen with both the Van Gundys? And
yeah.
He said, they probably didn't want to do it. But I thought that hampered it. But my guy's still in there, Zach LaVine, who I bet on.
He's down.
He's down to the final four. So I'm rooting for
Allie. That Allie can shoot.
Yeah, and LaVine. I don't know if LaVine will do to Allie what he did to Paul Pierce, which was he went to his athleticism
and reached up and dropped it over the basket.
Well, and a couple of times, you're not allowed to dunk, but a couple of times he would slap the backboard with his left hand and
right.
lay it in with the right. Now, Allie probably can't do that.
No,
I don't know
not.
If he'll put her in that
Boy,
position.
She can shoot, though. I think most of her shots were swishes.
Right, so maybe what's important with her, it's like playing the billiards pool.
Yeah.
If you get control, you never give it up.
See, I was surprised that Trae Young didn't go deep more often. I thought Trae Young was going to be shooting deep threes, and that's not what he did at all against
right.
Chauncey Billups.
And then Billups
can still shoot.
And once Chauncey got kind of in a rhythm and got close, you know, it was HOR, then it became Chauncey kind of outsmarted him.
Now, Paul Pierce does not have he's not the shooter that he once was.
Well, that's what he gets for slapping a giant Celtics logo on a court
exactly
in Encino.
Right.
You can't have
in
a giant.
LA.
Come on, man.
Yeah. Okay, so that was one effort. Now, there was another effort, which was on Saturday night, which was Saturday Night Live, all done remotely. I personally thought it was a big success, given the limitations that they had. I think it was a big success. Weekend Update was funny. The Zoom sketch where Kate McKinnon and A.D. Bryant can't figure out how to use Zoom was really funny.
Which, by the way, is exactly how my mom would have been on Zoom.
Yeah. I thought it had really, really good moments. So I thought Saturday Night Live, I would give that a thumbs up. By the way, Lindsay just looked up second highest rated Saturday Night Live of the season, trailing only the Eddie Murphy return from last December.
Yeah.
And what did you think of it?
As you know, it's arguably my favorite show of all time. I'm like a huge SNL geek. And Lorne Michaels has a saying. He says, the show doesn't go on because it's ready. The show goes on because it's 11:30.
Yeah.
And I thought that the fact that they made an attempt to uphold that tradition, that they originally had a show scheduled for the night before Easter, and they decided to stick with it and go for it, I thought was extraordinary because it was really hard to do. And like Tom Hanks said in the beginning,
yeah,
he said,
some will work and some
right.
will be,
He goes, it's SNL. And that
yeah.
is typical SNL. Some skits work. Some fall completely flat. Others are kind of somewhere in the middle. But, yeah, I was glad I watched it. I hung in till the end. I was with you. My favorite skit was that one with when they were doing the jokes about the Zoom, which I thought was pretty funny. And now they've set up a model where they can maybe keep it going.
And they also had that really nice tribute to the music guy. At the end of the show, I should know his name. Do you know his name?
No, but he had worked there from the beginning and had helped them, you know,
coordinate all their musical
right,
elements.
Which I thought was great.
Yeah, that was neat. And then the third big effort of the weekend was Tiger King, episode 8, starring Joel McHale.
I'm very, very proud of myself. I did not watch 1 second of that. What did I miss?
Really? Well, Joel McHale was funny. He was Joel McHale. He was doing the talk soup thing. It was hit and miss on the guests. I would say overall, it didn't work. Overall, I'd give it a D. And the only reason it didn't get an F was Joel McHale, who got a couple of good jokes in. They didn't have all the people. Like, how do you do a Tiger King extra episode without having Carol Baskin in it? You need to have Carol Baskin. You must have Carol Baskin. You must have James Gerritsen, the guy who turned state's evidence and actually testified against Joe and put him in prison for 22 years. And by the way, how do you do that show without having Joe Exotic himself, even if it's some recorded interview from prison? So they had guy with no legs. I'm just going to summarize these people in this
way. All right, let's stop for a second.
Yeah.
We're sure that's a guy?
Yeah,
I thought that was a woman.
No, he identifies as a man.
Okay.
Yeah, he identifies as a man. So we had the guy who got his hand bit off. We had the guy with no legs, with those two kind of metal legs. We had John Finley, who was just as tough to interview by Joe McHale as he was for me to interview on my podcast. We had the zookeeper, who seemed like a genuinely nice guy, who cared about the animals above all else. We had Jeff Lowe, who came off as the a-hole like you would expect. Some reference to the nannies. They've got a really hot nanny, and, of course, they've got that open relationship. And am I missing anybody, Lindsay?
I don't think so. I mean,
the story with the hot nanny is that she's an import, that they brought her in just for the show. She was like a hot Instagram model, and they said, hey, you want to be on this show? And she said, sure, and they brought her in.
Yeah, because Tiger King was all about him rolling with different girls and his wife being totally into rolling with different girls.
Yeah, so now, is that the end of that?
I think that the only thing that would get it a notch further, the only thing I could imagine is if Carol Baskin ever did something. Carol Baskin, I know from my book or in the podcast, has said not doing anything. Obviously, even for Netflix, not doing anything. I think Carol Baskin wants no part of it because there's an open investigation. They reopened the investigation into whether or not she killed her husband.
Well, what was that show you told me to watch that I didn't watch where the guy had the microphone on and he went in the bathroom and basically confessed?
What was that show called, Lindsay?
The Jinx.
The Jinx, right, starring...
Fantastic.
Who was
Robert
that guy?
Robert Durst.
That's the craziest one of all time because you go through several people turned up dead, all being linked to Durst.
I think you'd like it because it's not like this weird, trashy reality show stuff. Like, this is like a legit, like, thriller investigation. It's
these
real.
Are rich people, John. These are people
excellent.
You can identify with. They're rich people.
Yeah, I don't have anything against train wrecks. I mean, I like Sheena and Kristen from Vanderpump Rules, and those are the two biggest train wrecks.
At one
on
point,
TV.
He lives dressed as a woman, which is fantastic.
God bless him.
Yeah, Robert Durst's family, like his dad was like one of the most wealthiest people in New York. They're like big real estate tycoons. And then he ended up, since Robert Durst turned into such a weirdo, he ended up giving the company to his son, and that's where kind of things fell apart. So he was like the outcast of the family, and like, you know, they got billions and billions of dollars, and that's why a lot of this stuff mysteriously kind of disappeared or fell to the wayside, or, you know, the cops, you know, didn't follow up on leads.
And then at
like
the
that.
End, he goes into the can with a live mic and admits he did all those kills. It was unbelievable.
So wait a minute. Let me ask you guys.
Yeah.
So do you think the reason, like the first thing a lawyer would tell you if you're ever in an investigation or you're in a lawsuit, Mace, what's the first thing a lawyer will tell you?
Not to talk to anyone?
Stop talking. Right,
yeah,
Lindsay.
Sure.
Stop talking. I'm now your representative who speaks. So do you think, okay, you mentioned Carol Baskin has said no to everybody. She said no to Netflix. She said no to Culture Pop. She said no to everything.
Yep.
So do you think the reason is because she's guilty and her lawyers have told her, look, any interviews you do or anything you say can incriminate you?
100%. That's 100% why. And especially since I think that the local sheriff's department and the local law enforcement was dramatically embarrassed by that show. Because it seems obvious to everybody. It's like even Dodgers president Stan Kasten was on with this last week. And I asked him, do you think Carol Baskin killed her husband? He said, I'm a lawyer, so I can't make a statement like that. But there sure is a lot to be suspicious about. You know, the truth is, I think those police officers and that sheriff and the law enforcement there is embarrassed that they missed all the clues and couldn't solve the case. That's why they announced right after the show, we're reopening the case. I would not be surprised if they figure out that Carol Baskin did it.
But wait a minute, how? How could they figure that out? If she fed him to the tigers, where's the evidence?
Well, there have to be witnesses. She couldn't have fed it to the tigers by herself. Do you really think that that woman could have killed her husband and got him into a cage and fed him to tigers?
There's also speculation that she might have buried him under the, what was it called? There was like a garbage dump or something like that on her property.
There was a landfill on her property?
So there's something on her property that they think that she might, like her sewer tank or something like that.
Oh, yeah, her septic tank, that he might have gone into the septic tank.
Yeah, or that they buried him underneath it because they installed the septic tank like shortly after he disappeared.
Hmm. But Mace, that's a good point. I didn't think if there are accomplices or witnesses and one of those people roll over, then it's a whole new ballgame.
Because it would be very difficult for that woman to pull off that entire thing by herself. Because remember, there was a car parked at the airport. There was there were all these superficial things that had happened. So she would have had to park the car there, kill the husband, somehow get the husband out to the tigers, maybe cut up the husband in order to feed him to the tigers, all that stuff in order for it to happen. I just think there's got to be an accomplice. Somebody else has got to know. Somebody with a blue shirt or a yellow shirt. I forget how the shirt arrangement worked down there. But you climbed the ladder by having a different colored T-shirt. Somebody high up in the Baskin organization must know the truth about it.
Hey, either one of you guys, do you think anybody came out of Tiger King looking good?
You know, it's funny. Last night, one of the guys, the head zookeeper, actually came out of it, I think, looking good. He was the guy who said that the animals trusted me, that I was there for the animals, that I was there to protect the animals from Joe, that those were my cats. I think he probably came off the best of anybody on the show.
His name, you're talking about Eric?
Is it Eric? The guy with the long blonde hair.
Yeah. Eric. He was, I think the same thing, because when Joel McHale asked him, like, he mentioned something about, like, Jeff Lowe asking him who your loyalty was to, and he said, my loyalty isn't to Jeff and it isn't to Joe, it's to the cats.
Yep. So I thought he was the one guy who came off well during the entire show. But you know what it is, John? You watch, are you all caught up on Succession?
Yes.
See, that's a very similar show, just with rich people, because nobody is likable. You can't really root for anybody on that show. They're all horrible human beings.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of anybody after two seasons has come out of Succession looking good. Definitely not anybody in the Roy family, and that's basically who the show is about.
You know, like maybe Frank or Jerry or somebody like that. You know, one of the tangential characters comes out.
Yeah, but Jerry's got that secret life going on with the, you know, with Culkin.
Kieran Culkin. Yeah.
And Frank is probably the closest.
But isn't it just like your? I mean, I don't watch your housewife show, but isn't it just like your housewife show? There's nobody likable on there, are there?
Strangely, the one person that comes across likable on Vanderpump Rules is Lisa Vanderpump, the one who employs all of them. All the underlings come across like just head cases.
Yeah, I heard Lisa Vanderpump has an animal shelter and raises money.
Yeah, Vanderpump Dogs.
Raises money for all sorts of causes to protect dogs around the world.
Yeah, does a ton for West Hollywood, sponsors Gay Pride. You know, she comes off very good, but everybody else comes off like a train wreck.
Right.
But the thing is, those guys are all going to become stars out of this show. Do you think the people on Tiger King are going to become stars, or is it a one and done?
No, this is it. Last night, I mean, the sound you heard at the end of that show was most of those people falling off the face of the earth.
See, Vanderpump Rules is going to spin off. And they've got about seven candidates for a spinoff that could work.
Yeah, no, these people are done. These people are done. But they had a nice little run.
Well, they were the talk of quarantine. They were
the show served an important purpose during this really difficult time.
Gee, Steve, what purpose would that be?
Keeping us occupied?
Oh, I thought you. I just threw you a lob that you missed.
What was it?
I'll tell you next.
Oh, it was a tease. missed a tease. It
apparently
just
not
like,
a very good one.
Just seemed like kind of an obvious thing. All right. Coming up next, what we teased. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.
All right, let me talk to you about Power Pro Plumbing. They've been a sponsor of the Mason and Ireland show forever. They've been with 710 ESPN so long, they were a sponsor of Max Kellerman's back when Max was here. And so they're part of our family. And they consider the community part of their family. Raul Ramirez, the owner, knows that you're going to have emergencies that come up during quarantine. You're going to have plumbing problems. You're going to have heating problems. You're going to have AC problems. Of course, Power Pro is there to fix all that during these critical times. But they're also there if you need help with anything else. If you need to drop off a prescription, if you're stuck in your house, you can't get out, you need groceries, you need anything, Power Pro would like to try and help. They'll be at full capacity. They've also implemented all sorts of procedures based on CDC recommendations to help you with plumbing, heating, and air, and anything else you may need. If you're in a fix, a bind, call Power Pro. Call 800-584-4116. That's 800-584-4116. Or visit them online at powerproplumbing.com.
Hey! It is Monday. We are cranking it up for another week. We are so excited because today, weirdly, we had said for a while, I think maybe since we saw him on Curb Your Enthusiasm, John Hamm, we said one of our dream guests is John Hamm. And Lindsay went to work on it, producer Lindsay, and sure enough, she landed us the big fish, John Hamm, coming on the show in the 4 o'clock hour. Couldn't be more excited about that. Have been a fan of his for years. You actually watched one of his movies last night.
Yeah, I watched Richard Jewell, and I watched The Town last week.
The Town is a great movie.
Which he's in, but Hamm's an interesting guy. Huge sports fan, by the way. Big St. Louis sports fan. So
Cardinals fan.
He's coming on right at 4 o'clock.
Playing the game the right way, John.
all right, so you can be a part of the show in several ways. Number one, you can call us. Our phone lines are always open at 877-710-ESPN. That's our live call-in phone line. You can also ask us questions on Twitter. Just ask anything you want and then put hashtag Ask Mason and Ireland. And we'll get to that. And we've also set up a voicemail line where if you don't have time to wait on hold or if you don't have access to Twitter, you can call and leave a voicemail. Our new voicemail line is 530-ESPN-710, 530-377-6710. Now, in a few minutes, we're going to bring on a guy for our senior shout-out. We've been recognizing seniors that are graduating from high school and college. But, Mason, in the meantime, you want to check out a voicemail or two?
Yeah, let's listen to a couple voicemails.
What do you got, Funch?
Hey, Steve and John. First time I've been out in about 4 weeks, so I haven't been able to listen to you guys. But here I am. I get to listen in. I get to call in. So, hey, I've been out of the loop, so what do you, number one, you guys already said, just repeat yourself. What do you guys think of the Rams' new logo? I'm kind of glad that it looks like they brought back the old colors from the 70s and 80s. And you know, here's a name from way back, Loretta Emery. Talk to you guys later.
Oh, wow. Loretta was when
Loretta.
We were in San Diego.
Yeah.
The thing I remember about Loretta, who worked with us when Mason and I first got together, was she had a gigantic crush, an unabashed crush on Christian Laettner.
Oh, that's right. Christian Laettner.
Which I thought was weird.
Yeah, that was
weird.
But
in terms of the logo, Mace, you're going to die on that hill by yourself.
I am. I'm not going to be by myself. You know, here's how I'm not going to be on that hill by myself. We are all going to be wearing it when we ultimately can go to a football game. But I will say, he mentioned the colors. I actually think the colors brightened up. It's a brighter blue and it's a brighter gold. And
now,
I
they're calling
like what
the
they did
gold,
with the colors.
They're calling the name of the color for the gold Sol, S-O-L,
yes.
Which is sun in Spanish. But what do they call the blue? Is it Rams blue?
I forget. We were on the same conference call. Is it Rams? I think it's.
I think it might be Rams blue. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's Rams Blue or Royal Rams Blue, something like that.
Here's my issue with the logo, and it's only with the skull logo, the Rams head, which is one of the secondary logos, I think. I don't think it's going to be anywhere on the uniform. Ever since Eric Dickerson pointed out that it looks like a phallic symbol, I can't get it out of my head. And Eric was even more direct than that. When Eric was asked about it, he said, every Ram fan calls me and tells me it looks like it has a penis on it.
I think Eric's got a dirty mind.
And ever since he said that, I can't get it out of my head. I think that logo, that particular logo, well, you realize every time you say I don't see it, you've invited 25 more Rams fans to circle it and send it to you on social media. Mm,
yeah, I still don't see it. Once they do that, I don't see it.
If they correct that one small thing, I'm actually okay with all those.
I already bought a T-shirt, gray T-shirt with the Rams head logo on it. As soon as I get it, I'm tweeting out a picture.
Excellent.
And I bought a cap with the new logo. I bought the black cap.
With the skull head on it?
No, not with the skull. The black cap has got the horn logo, and then the T-shirt has got the skull logo.
Do either one of them have the L.A.?
No, neither one has the L.A.
Because you think there's a chance that the L.A. logo with the ram horn behind it could be the new helmet logo. I am praying they don't put letters on the helmet. The Rams have never had letters on their helmet. It's always been whatever you want to do with the Rams horn, but it's always been just a Rams horn. Like the Cowboys have always been just a star. The Steelers have always been just the Steel logo. There's never been letters on the helmet for the iconic franchises that like the Rams. So I'm really hoping they don't do that.
Yeah, I based on my inside information, I have no idea what they're going to do. But it wouldn't surprise me. It looks like it would fit on a helmet. Now, to be honest, I would rather the helmet not change at all. I would rather
I'm okay with that.
Just be the new Rams blue with the gold, the sole. I would much rather it be that. But you know, the idea that somehow 12 angry guys on Twitter are going to get the Rams to change what I'm sure they spent a lot of money and time and effort on in designing these logos, I think is just silliness.
Well, we'll see.
Eric Dickerson in a Twitter account is not going to change what the Rams are going to do.
Well, a Twitter account won't, but Dickerson actually works for the Rams. I mean, he's in the building and he gets paid by them. So,
yeah,
he's
an ambassador.
Right. So what he says should matter. What we say shouldn't matter, but what he says should matter. And he doesn't like it. So we'll see if he throws up his hands and gives up or if he keeps pushing. It'll be interesting.
Throw up your hands now, Eric. It's not changing.
All right. Coming up next, our senior shout-out. And by the way, I think I have it right here. I was going to say we're still doing senior shout-outs this week, right? If you want to, if you want to recognize a senior, somebody who's either a senior in high school or a senior in college, you can send an email to ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com. ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com. Just tell us something about the senior, list the name, the school, and the sport they play. If you're that senior yourself, you can nominate yourself. ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com, and we'll meet one of them next.
Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, this is a cool thing we've been doing. It is a very weird year to be graduating from high school or graduating from college because normally you'd have a big commencement, you'd have a big family party, you'd get together with your friends. If you're in high school, you'd get to go to the senior prom. All that stuff is unlikely to happen, won't happen this year. So we've been looking for ways to honor those seniors and bring a little bit of attention to all of their accomplishments at this time of year.
And today we get to talk to Caden Arnold, who is a senior at Palisades High. He played on the basketball team this year. Caden, good to talk to you, man. How you holding up?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Good, man.
We have no complaints. So Caden, somebody told me that not only do you play basketball at Pali High, but you have three sisters and they all play basketball. All four of you play basketball at Palisades?
Yeah, that is true. All three of them were on the varsity team last year, and all four of us won a championship.
Damn, it's an Arnold takeover at Palisades. That's something, man.
So Caden, was there when you play with your sisters, when you're just goofing around playing, do you take it easy on them or do you go all out?
Oh, I go all out because we all want to play college basketball. So I always tell them that if they can beat me, then they can beat some of the best high school players, I assume. So
right.
I always go hard and make it a competition.
So, Caden, what's the book on you? What's your game?
I'm like more of a 3-and-D guy, glue guy, and shoot some threes, rebound. I love playing defense, like stopping them. If we won a game like 2-0, I would love that. And I love passing too, because I feel like a flashy or nice looking pass that leads to a score is a lot cooler than like just hitting a contested jumper.
Wow, you're a very unselfish player, and
well,
coaches
you know,
love to hear that you're committed to defense.
Well, and the passing thing, Caden, you share with LeBron. You know, LeBron will tell you if you talk to him that he'd much rather get an assist than a bucket. And you can tell, by the way, he's going to finish top five all time in both, but he says he would much rather get an assist. Now, you're 6'4", correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's weird because in high school you probably... Well, in high school, you probably had to play all five positions, right? You'd probably had to play some forward and center at 6'4"?
Yeah.
All right, so
yeah,
in
college, played a lot of that my last 2 years.
All right, so in college, you're probably going to be a guard or a swing guy. Where have you figured out where you'd like to try and go next?
I've been talking to a couple different schools, but I haven't made any decisions yet, and I'll probably be making the decision in the near future, but I'm still waiting on my options and where I want to decide to go.
What are you studying? If it came down, like let's say it didn't work out for you to play professionally in basketball, what would you like to do?
I would love to have a career in sports management or in the sports industry, because I feel like that's what I'm most passionate about. And I'm also really interested in how, for example, NBA teams like build rosters. So I'd love to like find a way to work in that field, either in scouting or something like that. I think that'd be
video,
really fun.
Video analyst, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
No, that's cool,
You know, Caden, that Frank Vogel is one of many, many NBA coaches who started as a video coordinator.
Yeah, so Eric Spoelstra did. A bunch of guys did.
So you can kind of work
from... I
knew
about Spoelstra.
Yeah, Spoelstra did, Vogel did, there's been a bunch of guys in the NBA who have kind of, Sam Presti, the GM of the Oklahoma City Thunder, started that way. So if you can break down stuff on film, it's a good way to get in. And who knows, maybe one day you'll be the Laker or the Clipper GM, and you'll be the one making the trades.
That would be cool.
And you'll be the one blowing us off when we try to interview you.
So, Caden, we can say that we interviewed you before you made the big time, and if you don't come on with us when you finally do become a GM, we're going to pull out this interview and replay it instead. So that's your reason to come on with us when you really make it big, okay?
Okay, I'll make sure.
Hey, cool. Well, listen, Caden, congratulations on a great career at Palisades High School.
And say hi to your sisters
for
us.
For you. Yeah.
Will do. Thank you so much.
All right, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, nice so that's kid. Caden Arnold from Palisades. Boy, so he has his sisters are Elise, Sammy, and Taylor, and they all play varsity for the girls' team at Palisades. And he plays, and he's right. You know, some of the top women's coaches, like Pat Summitt and Tara Vanderveer and you know, people of that ilk, the way that they used to get their teams ready to play in conference is they'd practice against guys. They'd have five guys come in and practice against girls. So when they took the court and had to play against other women's teams, they were used to quickness and size, and nothing really surprised them. So good for him for going all out against his sisters.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Let me see. Do we have time here? No. Why don't we hold? Jeff Passan had some stuff today.
We can get to that next, and then at the top of the hour, in 20 minutes, is John Hamm.
Cool. Doesn't even sound right. John Hamm on Mason and Ireland. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, 710 ESPN, Mason and Ireland. You know, I've got nothing but time on my hands, like all of it. I just told these guys, I walked by a guy today. I was taking the dogs out for a walk, and I walked by him, and he was sort of out in his front yard with the mask on. I said, "How are you holding up?" He said, "Not too good." Not too good.
It's tough. It's tough. It's April 13th. You know what today is the anniversary of that happened 4 years ago?
The 60-point game.
Yeah, I tweeted out one of our listeners, great listener, a guy named Kevin Smets, who, Mace, he was the guy who used to do all those South Park-like cartoons, those Mason and Ireland cartoons.
Yep.
He's an animator and an editor, and he's been a listener to our show, really good listener for a long time. Kevin, back then in 2016, put together Michael and I's call of the last 3 minutes of that game and put it to ESPN's video. And I sent out the link for it on Twitter. If you go to my Twitter page.
Oh, we should play it.
At LA Ireland. Sedano already did. Sedano played it for at 11:30 this morning.
We'll play it at the end of our show today.
What are the odds
that somebody's listening to both ends of the show?
Yeah, it's fine. It's 10 minutes long. But we could take us 10 minutes that we wouldn't be talking to Sliwa. So, they could do that. You know,
save us from that. Save us from that. Although he did text me and say he's got an unbelievable bit that will blow our minds tonight.
Excellent.
So I'm excited about that.
So I wanted to get to this. Jeff Passan, who covers baseball for ESPN, you and Lindsay are the two biggest baseball fans at the station.
Yep.
And so you guys are anxiously following, and I am too because of you, what baseball will look like and what are the obstacles in getting baseball back. And Jeff Passan says baseball doesn't have a lot of options here, that if they're going to have a season at all, it's going to be one way, and that's it. Here's Jeff Passan on SportsCenter.
Yeah, right now, Greeny, I think we're in a bit of a holding pattern because ultimately, if this is going to get done, it's not just Major League Baseball's choice. The players need to be on board, too. And the MLB Players Association last week was sort of surveying among its members their thoughts on a different variation of plans. There's, of course, the Arizona plan. There's one in Arizona and Florida, which is much less viable both politically and functionally. And there was, as Tim Kirkjian said a couple weeks ago, this thought that maybe we could just export baseball to Japan. I don't think that one's going to be happening. When it's all said and done, it seems like it's going to be Arizona or bust for Major League Baseball. And they have to get to the point where they say to themselves, okay, this is what we're going to try to do, even if we can't ultimately pull it off. But here's the hope. The hope is that this starts off as a biosphere, and eventually we get to the point in this country through testing and through antibody testing and through understanding a little better what the coronavirus exactly is, that they can move beyond this biosphere and go back to their cities. And even though they will probably be playing in empty stadiums for the rest of the year, the idea is that this would be a 2 or maybe 3 month thing as opposed to a 4 or 5 or 6 month thing.
Okay.
That encapsulates the entire season. Now, of course, there is the possibility that it turns into that, but idealistically, they want to spend as little time as they can in Arizona.
All right, Mace, what do you think?
Well, I think it's Arizona or bust. It makes the most sense to me. I mean, you know, you're going to have to do this in a limited space. And I don't know what it is, but I guess in the last 48 hours, I've started to think of some light in the tunnel. It seems like the curve is, you know, the proverbial curve is flattening, and people are starting to think about opening up and ways to open up. It feels like the Arizona plan is the one plan that's going to work, that may keep players satisfied. They'll have to agree to it. And, you know, they've got a great incentive to agree to it because then they get paid. I mean, they don't get paid unless they play. So they are very incentivized to actually come up with some form of a season that works for all parties. I think it's going to happen, and I think it's going to happen in the Arizona model.
And by the way, the Arizona model is this, that all the teams would go to Arizona and you would play the games in various spring training stadiums. You could use Chase Field where the Diamondbacks play, and then use a whole bunch of other stadiums. And you would, for the most part, be quarantined. You would be able to go from the hotel to the ballpark and back.
Yep.
And it's what some people have suggested, and the reason Jeff said the players have to agree to it, some players have said, well, I don't want to go 4.5 months without having my family with me. Because obviously players would be coming from all over the country. But Mace, you provide the key thing. If it's a choice of you leave your family, but you get paid.
Right.
I think a lot of players will consider going. And some players, especially ones with young kids, can bring their families with them. Because Steve, I don't think there's going to be school necessarily anytime soon. Like, I don't think kids are going to need to stay in their respective cities. They can go with their dads if that's an option to Arizona. Because, especially think about colleges. Like, I went to UCLA. UCLA has 35,000 undergrads.
Yeah, all gathered in one spot. I mean,
are you going to let 30,000 people show up on the USC campus all in the same month?
Anywhere that there are gatherings. I mean, there's, I watched Mark Cuban over the weekend. I forget he was on one of those. He was on with Chris Wallace, I think, on Fox News Channel. And Cuban was saying that really what we're looking at is America 2.0. That for some period of time, this is going to affect every aspect of life. Anywhere we gather, whether it is school, or it is church, or it is sporting events, or it is movie theater, anywhere we gather is going to be affected. And what's going to happen is there are going to be little flare-ups of this that take place. And if it shows that there is a cluster of people with COVID, that means that they're going to contact trace and figure out who everybody they came in contact with. That kind of stuff is going to be going on, I think, until there's a vaccine. And the vaccine is still 12 to 18 months away, maybe less now. But something like 12 to 18 months away. And until that vaccine is here, this is what we're going to live with. And that means, by the way, if you fall into one of the risk groups, if you're a senior, or if you've got type 2 diabetes, or if you're a heavy smoker, any of those things that makes you predisposed to having this in a more serious way, you may not be able to go to gatherings at all for a while. You may not want to risk that because you're in a group that is prone for more serious illness. So, I mean, I think this idea of a new normal is something that's going to take place, and we're going to ease into it slowly. And it seems to me the best way for sports to get through this would be to have these gathering, this sort of biosphere plan, this idea that we're all going to play in one place together, that we can manage, not protect entirely, but manage cases of COVID-19.
Right. And I'm glad to hear you say that not protect entirely, because I know last week you were arguing, we can't do it unless it's totally safe. No, you just got to do the best job you can and deal with the flare-ups as they come along. As a matter of fact, Lindsay, what day are we having the guy on that's playing baseball in South Korea?
Dan Straley's going to be on Wednesday. He's playing, for the KBO, and they're supposed to be starting up in May.
Yeah, so Mace, that could be really good news, because if things go well in South Korea, where they try this, and they're able to control it, and they're, we can use them almost as a lab experiment as to, okay, here's where they hit stumbles, here's where they were successful. And so we're going to talk to Dan Straley on Wednesday. He's over there. He's an American playing baseball in South Korea, and we can talk to him about the challenges of this, because they're going to go first. South Korea is going to go first. In the NBA, China is going to go first with professional basketball. So we're going to have a model as to where the landmines might be. But the fascinating element of this is what you brought up at the beginning. Would the players fight against this? I really don't think they will, because I think the players want to play and they want to get paid. And I think if you use China as a basketball model and you use South Korea as a baseball model, and for the most part, they don't have a ton of COVID-19 cases, and God forbid any fatalities. If there's fatalities, it changes everything. But if they're able to manage it and control it to a certain extent, I think that gives sports in America a little bit of a green light, and we can see how it goes over there. But I think that our leagues are going to be watching their leagues really closely.
Basically, we do have that advantage of watching another country that's further ahead on this curve go through it and see what they do that works and might not work as well.
Right, because a lot of people are saying, like, who's going to go first? Is baseball going to go first? Basketball? The question is, the answer to your question is, Asia's going to go first. South Korea is going to go first.
Yeah,
China's
yeah.
going to go first. We don't have to be the first ones to try in a pandemic to get sports back, because they're going first because they're ahead of us on the curve. And
we can kind of see the future.
Right, which is a nice perk. If you know, we don't have any perks in this thing for the most part, but that is, in terms of sports, if you're a sports fan, rooting for us to get gatherings back and get sports back. I heard the other day somebody say in South Korea, somebody sat next to somebody else on a train, and that, you know, that was a big deal. You know, so maybe when they do that, then all of a sudden we get to see, okay, so they're riding trains together. What does that look like for us? Can we open restaurants to 25% capacity? You know, we had Tom Penn on last week. I thought that was a fascinating talk with Tom, where, you know, he's got that group at LAFC, the 3252, which comes to every game and they sing and they sit in the same section. And what Tom said was he would like to, and he's doing research now to see if it's even possible, he'd like to find a way, if they start up again, even if they're limited on fans, to get the 3252 into the stadium, even if they're spread out throughout the whole building.
Right.
So, like, there's two of them in a row, and then you have an empty row, and then maybe two of them in the next row. And could you conceivably fit 3,200 people? The 3252 stands for the amount of people that sit in that section.
Yep.
Could you fit most or not, if not all of those people in, and still follow the rules of social distancing? I think those are the types of experiments that we're going to see discussed in the coming weeks.
Yeah. It still bugs me. Actually, we probably should get out just so we don't miss John Hamm, right?
Right. You can give a final thought. We got 7 minutes till John Hamm.
Okay. So I am somebody in my family, I don't want to say who, went to an Easter dinner yesterday.
I'll make one guess. If I get it in one guess, will you admit it? And if it's your brother Brian,
it's not. Although Brian's not taking this especially seriously, which,
all right,
which
I missed,
pisses me off.
My niece
went to an Easter dinner.
Mia.
This is Morgan. There was an 86-year-old grandma. I'm like, what are you doing? It so pisses me off. Dak Prescott
had a party for 30 people. Yeah.
Had a party yesterday. It's like, I don't understand where that defiance comes from. They think it's about them. It's actually about everybody else. There's something undeniably selfish about not following these rules and not participating in what we are all participating in, which is social distancing. We're not doing this just for us. We're doing this for everybody who's in a risk group.
Every generation has had to make sacrifices. You know, they talk about our dad's generation, and you and I both lost our dads, but they're known as the greatest generation because they were in multiple wars.
Yeah.
And you know, they had to go fight for the country. You know, go watch Saving Private Ryan and look at the sacrifices of those guys. The only sacrifice our generation is being asked to do is stay home, and we can't even do that. You know, it's like that Dak Prescott thing. I saw that and I went, you got to be kidding. I mean, it's a completely unnecessary risk.
Yeah.
So hopefully, people will get shamed into doing the right thing. But you said it in one of the shows last week. A lot of these rules don't exist. Like I asked, we had a golf guy on.
Yeah.
I said, why can't I go play golf? And you said, John, it's not you, because you would go and respect social distancing. It's the 30 other guys who would go right behind you and be drinking beers out of the same cooler.
And not even necessarily on purpose. Maybe think they're doing the right thing and just lose track of it and fall into old habits
their phone and say, hey, look at this.
I mean, it's all that stuff. I will say this state, we've had between Gavin Newsom and Eric Garcetti, we've had very, very strong leadership on this.
Yeah, they've probably overprotected. And as it turns out, they needed to be as strict as they were.
Yeah,
right, now we got a break for John Hamm.
Yep, John Hamm, the actor, Mad Men. All kinds of stuff. Coming up next for you, Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.